Well, The Adjustment Bureau is one of the most explicitly theological movies in the last 25 years. The problem is it's pretty bad theology. It tells the story of David Morris, who's played by Matt Damon. And David Morris has just lost a Senate campaign. He's an up-and-coming, you know, American politician. Just lost a Senate campaign, though. But on that very night he loses, he meets a woman called Elise, and he falls immediately and overwhelmingly in love with her. But then, as the story moves on, we see David arriving at work, and something very bizarre is going on. Everyone at work is frozen in place, and he sees one of his friends who's frozen in place, and these mysterious figures in fedoras are kind of fussing with his head. Well, he's, you know, flabbergasted. He calls 911, but soon they're after him. They chase him out one of the doors, and suddenly he's in this huge cavernous warehouse. And at this point, he and we, the viewers, discover what the heck is going on. It appears as though these men in fedoras really aren't human beings at all. They're more like angels. Their job is to enforce the plan. The plan is formulated by a person they call the chairman, who's clearly a God figure. And when things go wrong with the plan because of stubborn free choice or just chance, these angels are sent in to kind of adjust things. What you saw with the people frozen in place and the friend being worked on is one of these adjustments. Well, they tell David that according to the plan, he cannot have a romantic relationship with Elise. It's just not going to happen. And they tell him that they will block any attempt that he makes to establish the relationship, and if he tells anyone about them, they will immediately erase his memory and identity. So that's the way the story gets set up. It's set up, obviously, the story of fate, divinely imposed order, versus freedom. Now, in the 21st century, we shouldn't be too surprised which of these two is going to win. And so as the story unfolds, we see that David, despite the Herculean efforts of these men in fedoras, and despite what he knows, he still manages to cultivate a romantic relationship with Elise. At which point, a very powerful angel named Thompson emerges, and his job now is to put a definitive end to all this. And he explains to David why this is so important, why his particular case is so important, because David is destined to become the president. And Elise, by the way, is destined to become a great dancer, but neither destiny will be fulfilled if they have a romantic relationship. So he's saying that we're not trying to be cruel here. You're meant to be president, but this is just not part of the plan. Well, I'm not going to reveal any more of the plot, but just to show you that the thing is set up consistently as this great, terrible struggle between a divinely imposed and enforced plan and scrappy human freedom, and the two of them are in conflict. Here's what I find interesting theologically. They represent, if you want, two things that we both desperately desire. We want to be free, you know, and anyone in Western society in the modern period knows that that's a supreme value, maybe the supreme value. We want liberty. We want to live our own lives. At the same time, we all want the plan. We want some idea that the world, you know, makes sense, capital M, capital S. We don't like the idea that things just dumbly happen or it's just a series of unrelated events. We want freedom and we want the plan. The problem is, and it's the premise of this whole movie, the problem seems to be that the plan and freedom are just mutually exclusive. You can't have both at the same time. Now, here's why I say this movie is bad theology. Precisely because it sets up the problem in this way. That you have a overwhelming divine authority setting up the plan, and then you've got this scrappy human freedom, and the two are in a competitive zero-sum game. The more I give to divine the divine plan, the less human freedom, and vice versa. But see, this is just repugnant to classical Christian theology. It's true that on the modern telling, now I'll put on my philosopher's hat for a second, from William of Ockham all the way to Jean-Paul Sartre, that's the way the problem is set up. divine freedom, human freedom, fate and liberty, and the two of them are at odds. But see, that's the modern telling. It's not the classical Christian telling. Go right back to our core doctrine of the incarnation. What do you see? You see divinity and humanity coming together without competition. It's not as though the divine liberty suppresses and denies the human liberty of Jesus. Just the contrary. We say Christ is fully human. He's fully free with a human freedom. And he's the incarnation of the plan. We say the Word was made flesh, Logos. You might even translate that as plan if you want. He is divine freedom and human freedom coming together without competition. And see, that's the proper understanding of the two. Now, I know it seems strange to modern people. Well, how could that be? How do you think those two things together? Here's a simple example. Many more we could give. But think of a really good piano instructor, piano teacher, works with little kids. And she takes a kid now, and she brings that kid through a plan. The plan includes basic exercises to learn, you know, musical notation, to learn the basic moves of playing the piano. It might move into simple melodies then. It might move up to boogie-woogie and blues music and pop songs. It then moves, according to plan, into Chopin and Mozart and Beethoven. What's the good teacher doing? Limiting the kid's freedom? No, I would say awakening it. All this time, the plan is grounding and awakening and directing the freedom of the child so that at the end of the day, at the end of this process, the child can play whatever she wants. See how it works, where freedom is not opposed to the plan, but freedom is guided and awakened by the plan. Now, having followed this design that was imposed upon her by the teacher, now this child, come of age, is able to play whatever she wants. That gives you, I think, a much clearer idea of what Christians mean by freedom and why we hold that God's destiny, God's plan, God's providence is not crushing our freedom, but awakening it. There's a great quote in the Divine Comedy of Dante. He says, O Lord, in your will is my peace. See, that expresses the Christian idea, right? Not, O Lord, your will oppresses me. Your will limits my will. No. In your will is my peace. Is I find the person I am supposed to be. I find the direction to my freedom precisely in surrendering to your non-competitive will. I'd say maybe go see the Adjustment Bureau to find out what we don't think is true about the God-world relationship.